Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, Count Aaron O'Brien, and with me, from the undead, is Holly Michelle. Rise! Rise! Welcome to our Halloween special.
Bump. Bump. I'm going bump in the night.
So, we are in the midst of October, and we got the Halloween decorations up, and we got the makeup on, and we've got the clothes on.
I am sitting in the dark with a large glowing plastic candle, so.
Nice. Oh, it's just glowing?
Yeah. I was going to light a real one, but I was late, and this was in my living room, and I just grabbed it.
Got you. Right. Well, we have finished the Picard full look back, so we are done with that officially. It's gone. But we get to look forward to Picard, the new episodes coming up. So
that's true.
Fun.
We're gonna have a healthy rest period.
Yes, we will. We'll all get to recline somewhere,
sipping. What were you calling them, Picard? Something. What was that?
Picardy breeze.
Picardy
breezes. Yeah.
We'll sit back and sip our Picardy breezes.
That's great. They're so tasty. So full of measured wisdom. I don't know. So we're doing a Voyager episode this week. We're doing The Haunting of Deck 12. So it's a spooky episode for Halloween. But before we get into this, Holly, I thought we'd read out some very disturbing and scary news about outer space. Are you ready to be terrified?
I'm ready to be.
On a cosmic scale?
I'm ready to be curious.
All right.
Here we go.
So I'm going to do the top 10 scary things about outer space. Number one, chunks of the Milky Way galaxy are being sucked away. Some unidentified larger than anything known in the universe is sucking portions of the Milky Way galaxy away. So back in 2009, researchers found clusters of the galaxy moving at extraordinary speed towards a small patch of the sky between the constellation Centaurus and Vela. Scientists have dubbed this phenomenon the dark flow, in reference to the cosmic mystery, dark matter, and dark energy. So something's pulling our beloved home galaxy apart.
Ooh.
Hope it doesn't take us.
As I say, no immediate danger.
Not at the moment, but maybe. Number two. A giant black hole hurtles through space at 5 million miles per hour. So, the Hubble Space Telescope located a black hole in 2017 that's being manipulated by gravitational waves. The black hole, capable of devouring anything in its path, will eventually break free of its own galaxy and begin to roam the universe. Although the anomaly weighs as much as 1 billion suns and has reached the speed of roughly 5 million miles per hour, it's estimated to be still 8 billion light years from Earth. So, it's still far away, but, you know.
You know what's playing in my head right now?
What?
Good news, everyone!
Nice. Rest easy. Number three. Astronauts must drink at least 730 liters of recycled sweat and urine to live out in space for a year.
Ugh.
Yes, so water is a limited resource in space, and because of this, astronauts must resort to recycling their own waste. NASA astronaut Scott Kelly consumed approximately 730 liters of recycled urine and sweat during his year-long mission. Puts space travel in a different perspective.
It's very Dune.
Yes, but it is Dune, but it is filtered, so...
I mean, urine is technically sterile.
Sterile. Well, I suppose when it first comes out, I imagine if it sits there for long enough, it's not.
Well, that's true. I mean, if it goes into anything that is not sterile, it can grow things.
And, a regular glass of water can do that, too, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, their diets have to keep their urine super clean. Yeah.
Oh, and it's filtered, but you just gotta wonder, does it still have a little bit of the pee-pee taste? Because that's kind of gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you like drink it?
Never changed
like,
a baby boy's diaper. It's just, you're marked for life.
I've had that happen.
Same.
I never got it in my mouth, though, thank God.
I got it in my eye as well.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoosh.
Yeah. I was like, Mom, am I going to lose it?
We'll have to take that eye out. You'll have to have an eye patch on from now on. Number four, the night sky will someday be completely black. So as the Milky Way continues to merge with its neighboring galaxies, the view of the night sky from Earth will change dramatically. The speedy expansion will eventually pull the galaxy apart faster than light, eliminating distinct products of the Big Bang and nullifying points of reference for expansion measurement. So someday, our galaxy won't be there, and the stars will all be gone from us to see. It'll just be big, big black sky.
Blackness.
Yes.
Well, that stinks. Maybe we'll be far away from this planet by then.
I think we'll all be dead, but whatever.
You think we'll be dead? Well, I mean, if the universe is going to expand so much, if our planet gets too much farther away from the sun, you know.
Right.
Not a whole lot you can do with that.
No, not much. Number five, solar superstorms can cause blackouts worldwide. So, in July 2012, a corneal mass ejection referenced to a solar superstorm by the media tore through Earth's orbit and collided with a Stereo A spacecraft. According to Daniel Baker of the University of Colorado, had the superstorm occurred a week earlier, Earth would have received impact with a devastating after effects. So I think we've heard of this. I've heard about this multiple times, that if like a solar flare has come off the sun and this, you know, the plasma from the sun comes flying through space can hit us, it could cause like the satellites to go out, our communication systems to go out and stuff like that. So, So that's scary.
Yeah. I mean, if we lose our electricity or our communication abilities, we are dead in the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's no, we rely so much on technology and our satellites.
Mm-hmm.
There's, can you imagine? Like, no more Synthaholics.
That's done. So much for that. So, we had a, back in Buffalo in 2000, was it 16?
I was
no,
there
no.
for
it, no, it was 2006. I'm sorry. They had it was called the October Surprise, where it's just like a ton of snow just buried out of nowhere.
And,
it was called the October Surprise Storm. And it just trees went down everywhere. And, you know, it was just like people lost power. And, I was lucky because the apartment I was in, my landlady was out of town and she had a regular, like, rotary phone in the basement, and somehow that still worked. But
yeah.
But nothing else worked. Like,
so
everything else.
We,
yeah.
I grew up on a lake, and we had a it wasn't a rotary, but we had a landline phone that whenever the power would go out, we would still have phone access, even though we didn't have electricity. And it was just, like, tied into the power lines or something crazy. But we always knew that if we absolutely needed something, we had that phone.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if communication went out, it doesn't matter because, like, even landlines still use, you know, to make long-distance calls and stuff like that, they still use satellites. Mm-hmm. So it's still, like, you couldn't call, you know, anybody out probably within a couple mile radius, so.
Yeah, I don't know that we ever actually tried to call anyone. We just, you know, picked it up, heard a tone, and we're like, okay, we're good.
Oh, you didn't prank anyone?
No.
Oh, man. Come on.
I didn't. I enjoyed the storm. We had, like I said, I grew up on a lake, so we had these big bay windows. I would just go out and watch the storm.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It wasn't.
Number six, meteors can strike Earth with no warning. Of course, we all know this. Back in 2013, that famous meteorite that exploded over the Russian region, I think it's called Chelyabinska in Russia. About 400 people were injured, and most injuries were actually caused by broken glass because of the explosion, because the impact was so strong. It basically is, you can watch it on YouTube. There's tons of great videos of it. People like driving in their car or whatever, using their cell phones, and something just flies across the sky and then a huge explosion. Wow. But yeah, I mean, I know they have their telescopes pointed up in the sky looking for stray meteorites.
Space junk?
But anything, I mean, it's space is big, and I think I just read recently that they... a large meteorite went by Earth, and they didn't see it for like until it was right upon us. And I mean, it didn't hit us, of course. But it was very close. Mm. So, you know, 65 million years ago, we lost the dinosaurs because of a giant meteorite. I mean, anything can happen. So,
right.
That's terrifying. you're just sitting around, and suddenly a giant meteorite comes down.
Right, right. Kind of like I won't say it because I don't know who hasn't watched. What I was going to say.
Oh, okay. Well.
that would be a huge spoiler, so I can't say that.
Gotcha. Number seven, extended space travel can change your DNA. So, astronaut Kelly Scott has an identical twin. Kelly Scott spent a year in the International Space Station in 2016 and returned to find that he was 2 inches taller than when he departed, and his new physical difference between Kelly and his identical twin brother Mike, also an astronaut, were startling. The scientists compared the DNA of the two and found that besides growing 2 inches, Kelly's gut bacteria was completely different and his gene expression has changed. Scientists concluded that the changes were caused by stress of space travel, which can cause changes in the cell's biological pathways. Although Kelly eventually returned to his original height, the other genetic changes are seemingly irreversible, meaning that Kelly and his brother are no longer identical twins.
Wow.
So crazy that space can actually change your DNA from being out there that long.
So they say it's the travel. So is it the force or is it?
I think it's the stress of actually not having gravity.
Yeah,
it might be other things too. It could be, there's cosmic rays and stuff like that, and radiation that's out there. And even though the International Space Station is shielded for that kind of stuff, it's not obviously foolproof. Anything could probably get through. And there's probably other things that we don't even know yet. So. And he spent a whole year out there. So that was kind of like the experiment because, you know, he had an identical twin brother.
Yeah.
See what happened. So that's crazy. Number eight, gamma ray bursts can destroy planets. I think this is terrifying, actually. Gamma ray bursts, giant explosions from distant galaxies can send out waves of gamma rays which are capable of destroying entire planets if their properties are pointed directly at the planet in question. Despite such a grandiose scenario, Earth is relatively safe. estimates from a 2018 project that while gamma ray bursts will occur in the Milky Way galaxy about once every 5 million years, the radiation will most likely be distant enough that life on Earth will not be affected. But here's the thing. If it does hit Earth, we will be incinerated in moments and we won't even know what the fuck happened. We'll just be doing whatever, and all of a sudden gamma ray bursts will hit us and we'll just be like cinder. There'll be nothing left.
Wow.
I think that's terrifying.
That is. I mean, it is, but it's not, because it's instant. So that's less terrifying than something that's drawn out and...
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Like, I always thought if nuclear war was happening, I would much rather just be standing wherever Ground Zero is.
Really?
I was like, I know.
You don't want to be mutated and...
Yeah, I don't need that. I don't need, like, those, like, cannibal, like, mutants chasing after me and all that other stuff. I just don't. No.
I'm not a fan of the zombie thing, so let's move on to 10.
Yes. This is 9.
Oh, 9.
We're not done yet. After a month in orbit, calluses sloth off.
Sloth? What does that
sloth
mean?
Sloth. That means just slides right off. Kelly
Scott. That would make sense because the skin is healed. It's almost like a scab.
I guess. It says, Kelly Scott, the same astronaut returned from the International Space Station with numerous genetic changes, revealed on a Reddit Ask Me Anything that in space, foot calluses will eventually sloth off. The bottom of your feet became very soft, like a newborn baby's feet, but the top of my feet developed rough alligator skin because I used the top of my feet to get around here in the space station while using the foot rails.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that makes complete sense to me. I don't think that's scary, though. I'm okay with that.
I think it's just gross. I think people are like, ooh, that's weird. Like, like my skin's just going to start coming off my feet. But it makes sense.
Well, it's all dead skin.
Yeah, it is. It is dead skin. You're right. And finally, 10. The universe could literally explode in a few billion years. Says, according to the Big Rip theory, a few billion years, a mysterious permeating force that is known as dark energy will have become so powerful that it could pull every ounce of Earth's matter apart at the atomic level. Dr. Robert Caldwell at Dartmouth, a physicist, describes the apocalyptic scenario on a paper written in tandem with a professor in the California Institute of Technology. Well, that's terrifying. Of course, we got a few billion years, so.
Yeah, I think we'll be okay.
We'll all be good. Even our loved ones.
Yeah.
They won't know, so.
Yeah.
It'll
all be fine.
Yeah, so
happy Halloween. Happy
Halloween. Sleep easy and know that you could be incinerated, exploded, or pulled apart at any moment. Or your calluses could sloth off, so there you go. But I work so hard to get these calluses on my hands.
Right. Well, that is true if you like the monkey bars. You need those.
You do need the monkey bars. I think people don't appreciate the monkey bars.
Well, that's because the people who don't appreciate the monkey bars don't have any calluses. But once you are on the monkey bars a lot and you build up those calluses, it's like you could hang out there forever.
Yeah, you're just swinging back and forth all the time. It's great. Bunch of goddamn monkeys up there. Monkeys in space.
Monkeys in space.
Maybe we should tell them that the monkeys we sent out in space all came back super intelligent.
That's the next Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that's the DNA changing. No, I don't think we'll be telling them that. All right. Well, that is our spooky top 10. We're going to get into the episode, but real quick, I'm just going to give you some of our information. Please go check us out on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com/groups Synthaholics, and you can join the group there and say hi to us. We're always there, and people share memes and have other discussions all the time. Sometimes Star Trek related, sometimes not. I don't know. You can also tweet us at Synthaholic Duo. And you can check us out on YouTube. We have the YouTube /Synthaholics. And if this show is fun for you and it's something you would like to support, please consider going to our Patreon, patreon.com/Synthaholics, and consider donating to us there. And now, the haunting of Deck 12.
Start the fire.
So, Holly, this is a Voyager episode. This is Season 6, Episode 25, and it first aired May 17th, 2000. A long time ago. So we get the beginning of this. We get Neelix is in the mess hall, and everything is getting turned off, and the computers are all shutting down. The lights are all shutting down, and Neelix is walking out when he gets startled by 7 of 9. And she tells him, you need to go take care of and watch over the Borg children while they have a system-wide shutdown of the main power. And we're not told why the main power is going off yet.
Right.
But it is happening. And on the bridge, Janeway is, they're getting ready. They're shutting everything down, and they're getting set to go into this large nebula. And there is a little back and forth talk about what the nebula looks like. Harry Kim says that it looks like a giant bat. And Tuvok says that they sound juvenile. So that was nice of Tuvok just to put them in their place. So the rest of the ship the power goes out. The doctor turns off, and that's when down in engineering, they're shutting everything down too, and they're going to safely shut down the warp core. And then Voyager kind of floats into the nebula, and we are wondering, what the hell is going on? And we come back into Cargo Bay 2, and this is where Neelix talks to the Borg children, saying, I know this is strange, but we're going to be shutting the power down, so let's all get cozy. And he's going to read them stories and have snacks. They're going to have like a little cookout.
You know? Right.
And so during this time, it's funny that Borg children are smart in some ways and then just children in other ways. So like they understand they understand the science behind a lot of stuff, but they don't have the emotional understanding of a lot of things. So, the children start talking about, to Neelix, and they have questions, and one of them brings out the idea that Deck 12 has a ghost on it somewhere. And, Neelix kind of was like, no, there's no ghosts on there, but he has to tell them, they want to know what's going on Deck 12. And he finally says he'll tell the story of Deck 12. So we jump back as Neelix tells the story. Several months, they were going into a J-class nebula, whatever that is, and they're pulling in deuterium, the matter in the antimatter reactor for the ship's warp drive. So they're pulling it in as like a vacuum for their for the ship. And during that time, the ship is going through like these like turbulence, and it gets like more and more severe over time. Neelix kind of tells Tuvok that makes him nervous, and he said that a huge plasma drift passed by his Talaxian homeworld when he was younger, and it kind of scared him and made him it makes him reminisce of those times back when he was younger. So he's not too crazy about this. But during this time on the bridge, Janeway and the rest of the bridge crew say that there's the ship is the ship has issues with, I guess, the nadion emissions on the ship's collectors, and Icheb breaks into the thing. Is like, that can't happen with the collector. So he knows enough about the science behind it that this can't happen. So, and what's his name? Neelix kind of says, yeah, maybe I got that wrong, but it doesn't matter. And then while they're going into more and more into this nebula, it gets worse and worse, and they decide that they've collected enough of these material that they're trying to get, so they can actually they can leave. I think they filled up like 80% of what they need, so they're going to get out of there because it's getting too bumpy. just when they do that, there's basically like a type of explosion, and something hits the hull, and something basically gets into an EM discharge that breaks into the hull, and they cause like kind of havoc throughout the rest of the ship. And Voyager eventually gets out of the nebula, but we find out later that there's all sorts of problems that start coming from this explosion. And some of the things that we start telling, or we start figuring out, is that the communications go off, and all sorts of other issues with like the replicator. We have a scene where Janeway's trying to make a cup of coffee, and her first cup of coffee tastes like shit. And then later she gets another cup of coffee, and the liquid forms, and then it splashes down, and then the cup forms. So the replicators are all messed up. And we find out that Janeway talks to the ship.
Yep.
I don't remember seeing this before. Does Janeway talk to the ship any other times? I don't remember.
I don't know. I am not a Voyager expert.
I just don't ever recall her talking to the ship like that before, other than like, you know, hold together or something like that. You know, when
yeah,
you're going through something
I
really
definitely
tough.
Don't remember her ever crouching over, getting really close and intimate with it. Like, come on, baby, I will stroke you later if you just pull through this one time.
Come on. I just put all those repairs into you. How much more do you want out of me?
Right. Do I need to buy you dinner too, please?
Come on. So Chakotay says that he did the same thing when one of his Maquis ships, and then she says, "What did you talk to him?" He's like, "I can't tell you. It's between me and the ship." And it's like, "Oh, ooh la la."
Inappropriate comment, you know, here.
Cue Dave Duncan.
Something about a hole in the ship.
Hole in the ship. While they're having this conversation, Janeway kind of turns and looks out her window and says that asteroid field or meteor belt. And she's like, he goes, "Yeah, it's far away distance. It's not going to hurt anybody." And he goes, "Yeah, but we passed it already." And then she goes out to Paris and says, "Hey, what's going on? We're going in circles." And he looks at, he's like, "No, everything looks fine." And then she has Tuvok run a diagnostic and reveal that there is something going on with the navigations for some reason. And they need to rework everything and look into what's going on. So there's shipwide problems all over the place right now. And then the ship then all of a sudden, she orders the ship to stop. And then all of a sudden the ship just goes to warp 6, and they can't even shut it off, and they're just flying towards another destination, which they don't even know, which is pretty unsafe if you ask me. And then Janeway, basically they talk to, they have Chakotay go down to engineering to see what's going on, because she asks where B'Elanna Taurus, and it tells it B'Elanna Taurus in engineering, but then it starts telling where all the rest of the crew members
are.
Everybody
else is.
Yeah. So Chakotay goes down to the engineering, but the turbo lift just starts dropping. And I guess they have sort of like some inertial dampeners that saved him at the last minute. So, but he could have been like a pancake if not. So that was good, at least that happened. Chakotay lived. And I guess they found that there's a source of the problem was in some of these bio gel packs on deck 12. I always get these gel packs are so weird to me. It was such a weird idea that they threw this out there, and it always comes back over and over again with Voyager about the gel packs and how
what is it about these that is so important?
I could never figure out exactly what they actually what's so it's just so different. So it says bio-neutral gel packs were formed of computer technology used by Starfleet, developed in the 2370s. Gel packs form a basis of bio-neutral circuitry, which is essential for organic computer systems. So okay. The packs contain neutral fibers surrounded a blue gel with metallic interfaces at the top and bottom and help store more information and operate faster speeds than insulinear circuitry.
So what is it? Is it like a hard drive or is it like an IV for the computer? I don't understand.
I think it's both. So I think it's a fluid that it can actually contain information, but also it's a faster way to retrieve information as well. But I don't know. It's just one of those weird things. I just they always reference it in Voyager.
It was designed as a scapegoat to just be this thing that they can blame shit on.
That's exactly what it is. It's like, you know, they have to have techno babble why things are working or not working. So, next we have one of the crewmen is, she's opening up a diagnostic panel when 7-9 stops her and says, hey, you just knocked down everything in the astrometrics lab. And she goes, I just opened this. I didn't do anything. And, this is when, we find out that, the power starts getting all wacky. And when she goes back into cargo bay 2, we find out that the, she's attacked by some weird gas and then electricity starts moving through everything and she tries to escape. I love it how she's like so calm, you know, through the whole thing. I would be freaking out. I'd be like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck.
But it kind of bothered me because you couldn't tell if she could see it. Because she never once acknowledged it. Right. So it was very bizarre. And then as soon as she was between the two barriers, or three barriers, she then started to suffocate. So it was curious. I wasn't sure until later on in the episode if it was a visible gas.
Yeah, and well, apparently she saw something, or she detected at least the gas.
Maybe her eyes don't see the same way we do. I don't know.
That's very true. Very true. But she, she gets trapped into like between two shields and, or three shields, like you said. And then the gas and that electricity entity or whatever that's on the ship actually, knocks out because she can't breathe the oxygen. But just in time, Chakotay and Torres, who are looking at the gel packs, see this happening, and Chakotay just shoots the computer, and that somehow that turns it off.
So. Not in like a specific spot, just like dead center. And I was like, they should have at least picked a corner or like a, all right, I got to aim for this specific place, because it was just like, all right, well, I'm just gonna shoot the screen and disable everything.
Yeah, I know. It's like, kind of weird. Like, how does he know that's going to do it?
Right, yeah. Because, like, somebody getting on the ship could just, you know, stab it with a knife and, okay, well, ship's mine now.
I know. just do that.
I was quite bothered by that.
I know. I thought it was weird, too. And they don't even show the shields go down, and just Torres goes, shields are down. And then...
Yeah. There wasn't even, like, a down, like a sound. It was just like, no. Go ahead.
And just jump to the next scene.
A little hasty there, B'Elanna.
Yeah. Did you even look to see if those were down? And Chakotay's blowing up your ship. You're chief engineer. You know you got to fix that shit in about another 15 minutes. Right. It's like, you asshole, don't shoot my ship. So in the mess hall, Neelix is cooking with the crew members, and this is when the lights start flickering, and Kim tries to call engineering, see what's going on, but can't get through because obviously communication's all on the fritz. And so after that, Kim says, everyone go to your posts until we figure out what's going on. And he tells Neelix, you should stay here. This is your post. You should stay here until we find out what's going on. So he leaves Neelix there.
In the dark.
But wait, I can't see anything. he was left in, and I think he said like he was almost there for like 4 or 5 hours in the dark before he decided probably. To leave.
Well, not really truly in the dark.
No, there was that flame.
He's got the burners.
Right, which was weird. Just left him running. I think that's really like a huge fire hazard.
Later on in the episode, they literally just leave it. And I was like, first of all, it was too high to cook on, let alone to leave burning.
What could you possibly be cooking in there?
I mean, honestly. So like, I went to Panda Express today, wormhole, but, but I mean, they cook, their flames go up around their woks like that, but not to the extent that, you know, so Neelix is like hiding behind the stove and he like pops up around it and this fire is just, and I'm like, Neelix. You've burned whatever's in there. If you haven't burned it, you've ruined your pot. You're not supposed to just leave that shit, on fire.
These pots are expensive, Neelix. We just can't keep making new pots. He's burning the shit in these pots.
Wow, you don't do that. You can't just leave it on fire.
I just think an open flame on a spaceship is a fucking crazy idea.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there's gravity, there's,
until there's not.
It's a state, until there's not. That's right, yeah. It's a stable environment until it's not.
Yeah, I know, until the gravity control goes off, so.
Yeah, but how did he have gas if everything, or maybe it wasn't gas, I don't know what it runs on in the future, but how did he even still have the ability to have flame?
I don't know. I guess there's enough gas and he can just leave it lit, so. But it seems crazy to me. I mean, if he's in like full kitchen mode and he's cooking, I get it. But when you're walking away, shut that shit down.
Yeah. Well, it's forgivable. He was so scared.
I'm so scared.
Like, that's still going to burn your shit down.
Yeah. Yeah. Your ship's going to burn down. On the bridge, I guess the temperature is extremely hot up there, and Paris makes a comment to Tuvok, but, Vulcan, the temperature is really hot, so he's like, it's nothing to me. And then we get Janeway talking to the ship again, trying to make a deal with the ship, saying, come on, baby, let's do something here. And then she says, I got something, Paris, go check out the helm control. And he's like, oh, man, it's working again, Captain, thank you. And then it explodes.
She gets a surge reading, and then she's like, get away from there.
And he gets his, burns his pretty face. Gets all burned up and boils everywhere. So, and they start, and they are going to take him to sick bay when all of a sudden the atmosphere turns off inside the bridge.
Yep.
And so they have to evacuate the bridge. So they get him to sick bay. The doctor's looking at 709 and other crew members that have been hurt. And when they bring in Tom Paris, and just at that moment, the doctor's hollow emitter just shuts off. And so things get worse, and they decide they're going to retreat down to the engineering room that point.
And just remember, listeners, that this is all a story that happened a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So, like, we're still getting, like, talks and conversations with the kids.
That's right.
Around the lamp.
Yes, this is a story that's all happening around the old fiery, the fireside story.
Yeah, so. The ghost stories.
It's spooky. So they are all leaving to go to the engineering because more of that nebula gas thing is it starts flooding the deck as well. So they have to get out of there as well. So they're all leaving. During that time, they also, we run into that same crewman, and, she runs into, Kim, Ensign Kim, and she thinks there's alien invaders, like Borg, are trying to take over, and he's like, nobody's trying, and she even, like, punches him in the stomach? Doesn't she punch him in the stomach?
She hit him with something, like lower chest, upper abdominals, she hit him with something, I don't know what it was. And then she's like, can we stop by a weapons locker?
I know. Okay.
He's like, crazy.
My hernia. You asshole. My colitis. So, she's freaked out. So basically the crew is all a little freaked out at this point. As Neelix says, we said before, he's up in the mess hall for 4 hours when he decides he's going to start looking around, and he has a phaser with him, and there's these doors that are just sliding open and closed, and he goes to look at, get a closer look, and then, behind him is Tuvok wearing an oxygen mask, and he's like, freaks him out. And he goes, I nearly shot you. And he's like, well, thank God you have a little more control you have some kind of control that you didn't kill me. And they go off and they start going through the Jeffries tubes, and they're trying to get back to, engineering. And during this time,
three, four, five decks down?
Yeah. And they have to go through all those decks. Right. And during that time, they've run into one of them with the nebula gas. And Neelix is freaked out by the nebula gas. Like he said, the story about the Talaxia years ago, where he got scared from the nebula gas passing the planet. Well, he sees like a skull face coming out. And so he's like really getting himself all worked up and freaked out.
Right.
So they're trying to work out some environmental controls in the Jeffries tubes, to try to vent the tube so they can pass through it, during that time. So from there, they go to, the Janeway and crew have kind of figured out that whatever's happening, this isn't just the ship, like, you know, going on the fritz. It's actually some kind of, entity, some alien entity they picked up in the nebula. So that's like a running, hypothesis that they have at the moment, or theory, should I say. So as they're all going down into the engineering, and they're trying to account for the rest of the crew, Janeway, the computer starts talking and reporting Janeway, and she figures out this might be this entity trying to communicate. And she starts talking with it, and it's giving more like computer answers, but it wants her to do certain things. And it wants her to go to astrometrics. And so she goes up there with Seven of Nine, and they head off there. Back in the Jeffries tube, Tuvok is still trying to work on that, venting those gas, but he's trying to teach Neelix some Vulcan meditation, and Neelix is trying to think of happy moments, and he's thinking about a birthday party, and when and when Janeway opens the platter, it's nebula gas.
Right.
That looks evil. So, and so it basically the meditation thing doesn't work. At least for Neelix. Janeway and Seven go to astrometrics and find that the alien is looking at these navigation logs and showing them where the nebula, where they got that deuterium from. And they want to return because this is basically their home. That's what it tells them. So they're going to give control to control back to the bridge so they can fly back to the nebula. And Janeway goes alone by herself. And, Neelix is talking to the children. So we're back into the present at the moment. And she said, basically saying that, the relationship between, Janeway and the alien is not working so well. She's trying to communicate with it, but the alien doesn't seem to, maybe not understand, but doesn't get the full scope of everything. And the alien doesn't trust, Janeway and the crew that much. So, when she gets to the bridge and they go to the old nebula that they were at before, they find out the nebula is gone. It has dispersed somehow, and that it might have been because of what they were doing there that dispersed the actual nebula's gases. And the alien gets quite upset and decides that they have to. It's basically telling to abandon ship and to evacuate the ship. And that's when Janeway decides that we're going to all leave the ship. And so everyone packs up and gets into shuttlecrafts, Delta Flyers, and other escape pods. But at the last minute, just as Janeway is going to abandon ship as well, she gets trapped outside, and It wants her to go back to engineering, and she doesn't want to because it's basically holding her hostage, and it starts choking her with more nebula gas. And she starts to reason with it, saying, you know, after we're gone, there's not much, you know, the ship's going to fall in disrepair, and soon the ship won't be functional after a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. And who do you think keeps this thing afloat?
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think is doing all the work here, you asshole? So, it says, you need us, and if you kill me, you're not going to do anything, and I'm not going to be a prisoner, and you'll have to kill me. So, it starts doing that, and starts suffocating Janeway. Janeway starts passing out, but at the last minute, I think it realizes that it does need Janeway, and it sucks those gases out, and so she can start breathing again. Okay. And so, at this moment, then we find out that they do pick up the rest of the crew a little bit later. So the crew is brought back onto Voyager, and they basically find out that they're going to have to bring the alien to another J-class nebula, and they're going to try to find a new home since its old home had been destroyed. And at this point, this is why they're turning everything off and letting the alien off into the nebula, and they get out. So during that time, Neelix is telling him the whole story with the children and telling him what happened, and then
and they're skeptical at the end.
They don't believe him.
Funny.
Yeah, they're like, come on! I knew it was when you start talking about the type of. What was that? The particles that couldn't work. And he's like, yeah, I guess so. And then he gets up after the kids go back into their the Borg regeneration whatever modes. Pots. Or whatever. Yeah, they basically going to sleep. He goes back up to the bridge and says, asks him how the whole thing went, and they're like, oh, it's going well. And Paris asked him if he was Mother Goose story, was telling Mother Goose story, and says, and he's like, certainly not. Some of those fairy tales can be frightening. Ogres and children eating monsters. Speaking of which, is everything okay? So, and we find out that, you know, obviously that the alien did get off the ship and everything's back to normal. So, and the crew goes off into the distance, hopefully getting back to Earth someday. And that is our spooky story.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this episode, Allie?
I mean, it was cute. What they tried to do was cute, you know. Mm-hmm. Get the kids all huddled around a torch and just kind of make them feel scared and insecure. And mm-hmm. some of these actors did a good job at trying to be logical and scared at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that was fun to see. I think it's funny that, you know, this alien comes in trying to make all the rules, you know, but it's counterproductive to coexisting, you know?
Right. Yeah. Because you're not the person that you don't know what's actually happening.
Exactly.
Right.
So I like that kind of shined a light on that, but I don't know. I mean, it was a fun little episode. It's funny because I had the thought, as soon as he starts telling the story to the children,
mm-hmm.
he's in the, I guess you call it the mess hall.
Yeah.
You know, the cafeteria hall. And, I don't know, just the first couple lines that he delivers are super, like, overacted. It got better. But it was like, oh, are they gonna play this like the over dramatized, like, is this gonna be like way overdone, like, because it's like a story? And then right. I was so glad that it stopped there after like the first sentence or two, but I was oh god.
Yeah.
But like, no, it was fun.
They talked with their Transylvania accent.
Exactly.
The whole time.
Exactly. But it was fun to see something take over the ship and legitimately leave them powerless. Without their humanity, they would have no power.
Right.
So, this is just a fun little...
Yeah, it's a fun story. It's like a one-off. Nothing spectacular other than seeing the Borg children that I think was this season where they picked them up.
Yeah.
I think with each of them, a couple episodes back of this, right? Yeah.
Because exactly. I'm pretty sure I've seen that episode.
Right. And, you know, it's not a spectacular episode. I mean, as we've noticed that most of the spooky episodes of Star Trek don't really play too well.
They're not very scary.
No, they're just, I mean, they might be intriguing for a minute, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like the idea that they're trying to make it into a haunted story, and he's telling it like a haunted story. But they bring up that they think there's a ghost on deck 12. So I guess you could sort of say that the alien was a little bit like, I think they said like non-corporeal, like doesn't have a body. Mm-hmm. So I guess it seemed more purely electrical, but maybe there's something more going on there that we don't know.
Yeah.
But, I thought it was fun, that they kind of like superimpose the kids getting kind of scared, but then kind of like doubting it. Cause if you ever told like scary stories to kids, they have tons of questions and they're always like, no, that can't be true or that can't be mm-hmm. right, you know? So it's always fun to see how kids react. And then even though they're like, they don't believe it, they're still like scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, no, well, you know, can we leave the lights on a little longer? You know, kind of thing, you know, because they just get scared. So, I, you know, it wasn't like when I watched it, I was like, yeah, you know, it's a cute episode at most. You know, you can watch it. It's like, there's nothing like terrible on it. It's just,
except for the fire.
Dangerous
danger.
Fire. Neelix is a menace to Voyager. Him and his cooking.
Gosh.
Yeah, I think that's. Well, I mean, like, I seem to recall there's like a lot of like stories of like ships having like being haunted with ghosts and stuff like that. So that's got to be scary when you're
like
stuck on
nautical ships.
Yeah, like old nautical ships, mm-hmm. and then like having spooky ghosts on them and stuff like that. That's always fun to think of, you know, like. You're on a ship, and then, like, something weird's going on, like,
Yeah.
You know, and there's nowhere to go.
No, there's not.
And especially if you're out at sea or, well, in their case, out in space.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a firm believer in you let in what you accept. So, that may be, they may sound wrong. I don't, if you go looking for spirits...
You think you might find them?
You're going to find them. If you accept that into your heart, you're going to find them. If it's something that you are skeptical on, you probably won't find them. You might. But if you don't allow that into your heart, you're probably not going to find them.
You might be skeptical and like maybe something happened and then you're like, you know, you don't believe it because you'll find a reason why something happened. And you'll be like, yeah, whatever, that's not true. Or that's not how it goes. That's not what actually happened. Like, but, you know, but the other flip side of that is if something, it did, like, something spooky happens. Like, a lot of people, like, recall things terribly. They think something happened when it didn't happen the way it actually happened. They have, like, mm-hmm. people have flawed memories. And mm-hmm. they think of certain things and, like, they assume something happened and they kind of, like, embellish it with their brain, their memories. Yeah. And so then they think like, oh yeah, that was like really spooky and blah, blah, blah. Like only like half of that happened and the rest of it you embellished, you know? And that's where I think like I hear like people tell me like a spooky story. I'm like, I don't know, you know?
Now I have one actual, like actually spooky story.
Oh yeah.
But it's, I mean, it's really short, but I was telling it the other day and I was thinking about it and, you know, I wouldn't put it past the friends I was with to have set this up.
Hmm.
So Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, of course. You brought it up. Well, let's hear it.
Yeah, so there was this house that went unlived in for years and years. And I think it finally got bought, I don't know, right before I left New York the first time. So I moved there in 1999. I graduated in 2007. So probably like 10 years that no one lived in this house. And the curtains in the upstairs were shredded and tattered, and they looked like they had blood splattered all over them. So, like, this is the haunted mansion, the town's haunted house. And it was on the corner of the very last street next to the railroads and then one of the main streets. Like,
That does sound spooky.
Yeah. So, you know, people have always said that, oh, it was scary. It's haunted and blah, blah, blah. Well, I was in a band, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was me, the drummer, the bassist, the guitarist, and then two friends. And we broke into the house.
Of course you
and
did.
And it was like...
All rock bands have to break into a house once. If Scooby-Doo has served me right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it wasn't hard. So I don't know... Now that I think about it, I don't know if maybe they'd done this before and maybe it was their idea and maybe they, like, orchestrated the whole thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But basically, so we got in through the door and everybody was, like, afraid to go in. So I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going in. So I go in and it's one of those really beautiful old, like, small Victorians. So, like, you walk into this large living room with, like, wooden floors, and there's, like, a den onto the right, and there's a spiral, a really narrow spiral staircase that's enclosed right after the den, and then, like, past that on the left, you've got, like, this tiny half bath and a kitchen. And so, like, we are all being really quiet because there are neighbors, even though this is on a corner, and we go in, and I get to almost to the spiral staircase. And probably the very last person was just stepping over the threshold. And for my account, this is how it felt at the time. So it legitimately felt like somebody was in the basement and they threw a bowling ball on the ceiling downstairs.
Right.
And so the ground shook. It was loud as fuck. We all freaked out, took off. We didn't even close the door. We just fucking took off. And... You know, now that I think about it, I'm like, I was the first person in. So, like, everybody was behind me. I was looking at the house. There very well could have been, somebody could have stomped on the floor to scare us, you know?
Right.
My thoughts, when I was younger, I rationalized it with, like, you know, the neighbors probably know that kids break into this house all the time. They probably know how this house is, and there's probably, like, a furnace that, like, kicks on or something that could have made us freak out. But it was so loud, like, it literally, the floor shook. So it had to have been something physical. And for a good hour or two, I was like, that was real. And then I was like, I don't know that was real. And then telling it, I was like, you know, it was probably one of my bandmates.
Fucking,
like,
with you?
Yeah. Stomping on the floor. Yeah. So, I mean, that was the only experience I've ever had. And it was, the belief was short-lived.
You start thinking about, like, I don't know if I trust these guys.
Exactly.
Could be anything here. Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
But they can't blame me. Like, they know who they are.
They know what they did. Crazy motherfuckers.
They know what they did.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah, and there's nothing more, you know, dubious than a bunch of, you know, young musicians. You know,
young musicians, yeah, there you go.
doing weird shit, you know. Especially if they're all, like, into the goth thing. So,
right.
Yeah. I used to go into a lot of, like, old abandoned places as well and just check them out. You know, I never had anything weird happen, but...
I find the beauty in that old, decrepit... ruins of life. I just, that gives me joy. I love cemeteries and.
Oh yeah. It's super cool stuff. It's really beautiful. Neat. I don't think, you know, it's funny is like, you know, they say like, you go, I mean, I have a few weird stories. Like I went into a cemetery at night and one time I saw like, I think it was a person, there was a person, it was like pitch black. The only thing that you could see is through moonlight, and under a tree, I just saw like a glowing ember. So I think somebody was smoking a cigarette, but you could just see something just glow. And it would just disappear for a minute. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck that is, but I'm getting the fuck out of here. I don't know who or what is there, but it's time to go. So.
Peace.
And I, you know, but it was, you know, cool. We used to go into like, cemeteries at night all the time just to be spooky, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun. It's always a fun to tell ghost stories and to get yourself a little freaked out. But you know, in the end, I don't know if I really buy into it. When I was younger, I thought I saw some stuff in an old house. But I don't know if I really believe it anymore. Maybe it was just my active imagination.
Yeah.
Not really sure. It was, but it's just one of those things that, you know, it's still fun, especially in Halloween times, you know.
Yeah.
Get all like into the spooky ooky stuff.
I don't know. When I was little, so I was raised in Nevada, Reno, actually. Mm. Well, I was raised in New York because I turned 10 in New York. So it was kind of 50-50, but, paganism is a real big thing in Reno, Nevada.
Really?
Yeah. And so, even as like a harmless dress up thing, it was not something that we did as a family because children would go missing on Halloween night. So Wow. Yeah, we didn't, I don't see that about Halloween. I still love the creepy and the macabre, but we didn't really get into the Halloween spirit, if you will. We always went bowling or to the movies, mainly bowling actually, which was always like our fun little thing. You know, we don't have to hide from the trick or treaters. We can just go have fun family time.
That's good. That's yeah. Good. And not be abducted. That's
and not thing. Be abducted. Yeah. That's kind of a bonus.
So Reno was like the people were being abducted or children were being abducted or at least things were happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's creepy in itself.
Yeah. And it was going strong. And, we actually, my mom bought this VHS tape that had, it was like a non-PC history of Halloween. And it was dark as fuck. And she made us watch it. And she was like, this is what you're celebrating. And so like, we had a really good, family dynamic. Like, we had discussions about everything. That's why I loved watching Star Trek with my parents, because I could be like, okay, why did they do this? Or what is this? And, you know, it really opened up really good dialogue for us. So, like, we had conversations like this all the time. Mm-hmm. But that video was creepy as fuck. Like, so creepy. You know, when we moved to New York, we didn't go out to trick or treat. We went out on mischief night with our friends and we had shaving cream fights and we egged each other. And
was it mischief night every night?
It should have been every night, but
I when I was like in my teens, like mischief night was like, it's like if you could get out of the house
every October night or every night in general,
as long as it wasn't freezing.
Oh, you man. One of the last Halloweens that I had a big ol' shaving cream war, I had on, like, a spaghetti strap tank top and big baggy blue caffeine jeans. And I was just freezing my ass off, covered in shaving cream. Like,
oh my God.
One of my eyes was so badly stinging because of all the shaving cream in it. Like,
oh my God. When the shaving cream freezes, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, I got pegged right in like the clavicle with a frozen egg. I was so fucking pissed. It was my brother's friend. My brother took off after him. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
That's
I was
hilarious.
Like, I don't know, 16.
Yeah, no. But yeah, I mean, that stuff all happens. That's mischief night. Things could happen. Anything could happen. Yeah. Someone could die. Someone could break a bone. You don't know.
But, like, in our town, everybody met, like, for their shaving cream wars. Like, with it was when it was eggs, like, you would hide in people's bushes and, like, deck people. But when it was, like, the shaving cream fights, like, you would try to sneak up on people, but it was a little harder. So we all met, like, at the Historical Society and just, like, beat the shit out of each other.
Oh, Jesus. And there's, like, some old guy... In the historical society building, going, what the hell has happened to my town?
Like Mr. Filch in Harry Potter.
Yeah, just like he's just shaking his head, like, what has happened to the dignity of this town?
Yeah,
guys are all like rolling around on the ground, beating the shit out of each other, throwing eggs in each other's faces.
Pretty much, that was my high school.
That was my youth.
That's my youth.
Yeah. We used to do a lot of stuff like that. I mean, we did eggs thrown a little bit, but we used to do lots of other stuff. Like one of the things we do in summer, we do pool hopping. So we'd go in people's backyard and we'd just, you know, go swimming in people's pools.
Yeah. As soon as they come home, you got to jump the fence and go find a pool.
But it was like at 1 a.m.
Okay.
I attempted to do
that once.
Yeah.
Couldn't find any pools.
There's a desert out here. What's happening?
Yeah, we weren't a rich town.
But we used to do that. We did a lot of stuff. One of the favorite thing would be actually one of the things we actually did was we'd run from the police. We wouldn't do anything. We'd just start running and they would start chasing us. And then we'd start hopping fences and then we'd hide somewhere in a lawn until the cops gave up.
Nice.
Because they'd just be like, what are they running from? And they would just start chasing us. And, you know, we had, you know, endless energy.
Yeah.
So we would just run.
Well, that's better than being at an underage party, hiding under kayaks while the cops are looking around the house. And you're underneath a kayak with spiders and frogs and God knows what else.
That sounds spooky, too.
Well, that's
you had
another
a spooky
fun...
upbringing,
huh? Oh yeah, yeah, I did. We used to ride our bikes to the cemetery every night in the summer.
Yeah,
we're a fun family.
We did crazy shit.
Not that my family was there when I was at underage drinking parties.
No, they probably would be like, "What are you doing here? This is my party."
Yeah.
Dad, what are you doing here?
Get that bong out of your mouth. You home right now, mister.
I'm telling mom.
Get the
Holly,
back
Holly,
of my
Holly, device. Holly, Holly, let me explain. Let me explain. Wait a second. I think I'm gonna puke.
Yeah.
Well, let's wrap up our conversation with the Haunting of Deck 12. And if you have crazy Halloween stories or spooky stories, you can always email us at sinsaholics@yahoo.com. Just let us know what you think about, anything spooky. Is there a spooky space story that you would like to tell, or something terrifying, happened to you that's worth telling?
You know, it'd be fun.
Hmm.
If they just like throw up a little video on the Facebook page.
Oh, you could do that too. You could throw a video up.
Tell us your spooky stories.
Or throw up and send it to...
Please don't throw up on video and post it on the Facebook page. All exorcists like...
Split pea soup just pouring out of the mouth. So gross. So gross. Yeah. But you can join us at the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Synthaholics. And, you know, say hi and join the group and, you know, don't send pictures of you yakking, but, you know, maybe something else. You can just even type up maybe something that happened. You just post story. It on this. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a couple of days, as you're listening to this, there are still a couple of days left before Halloween. So, I mean, don't feel pressured to share anything, but you're totally welcome to. That would be so much fun. Maybe we can, put a Halloween post and you can just kind of post to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
that's
anything.
A good idea.
That would be so cool.
That's a good idea. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Put maybe some kind of like, Halloween graphic with Star Trek incorporated somehow.
I thought you were going to say a possessed child puking pea soup.
You know, it turns people off.
Please don't do that.
It gets people upset, but, yeah. You know, who knows? Cool. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're so happy that you could download the show and listen to us and hear about the haunting of Deck 12 and our other spooky stories that went along with it. So
our silly upbringings.
Yeah, silly upbringings and the disappointment of the historical director of Hallowstown.
My own personal filch.
This town used to stand for something, and we used to believe in things, and now it's just children rolling around in the ground with eggs.
Students out of bed.
truant children. Well, everyone, thanks so much for joining Synthaholics. And as Dave would say, live long and prosper, one and all.
In his big 50 million miles beside of Mars, well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Cool. Nice. That was fun.
That was a fun episode.
Yeah, it was. It's so, because there's, you can't take it seriously. It's so silly.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
All right. All right. All that's going in. All right.
Yeah, let me yell at my dog for a minute. Can you hear him?
I hear him doing something.
Yeah, he's chewing on a bone. Jaegerby. Oh. Hey. Jaeger. Stop. Yeah, take it elsewhere. No, take it. Go on.
Take it outside.
He's like, this is my bed, though. Okay, he's now laying on the clean laundry. But that's better than it crunching in the microphone.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
One, a two, a three.
Happy Synth-a-Halloween.
Synth-a-Halloween, y'all.